Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the unnamed, don't really have a name, but I guess it's called the Ruhi Sleep podcast and show on CFRC. I think we should never have a name. I don't know what everyone else thinks. But does anyone remember the Ellen show? Like, before the Ellen show, like the Ellen, like, sitcom in the 90s? Yeah. My parents and I used to watch it all the time. And their big running gag was they never had an opening to the sitcom. Like, they were writing a song and they were going to have an opening. But Ellen would just come on with, like, a white screen in the back and just be like, we don't have it yet. And then it credits and then the thing would go. I think we should do that, where we don't really name it until the final episode. And then we give it some, like, name.
We could also go the other route and have like a different name every time.
Yeah, like call it the Ruhi Sleep Podcast, the Ruhi Sleep Show, the Ruhi Quality Sleep.
Yeah, Conversations.
Conversations. So, whatever it is, whatever the title, we're glad everyone is tuning in. We're back to talk with Ruhi. I'm again Mike. Andrew's here as well.
Hello.
We're going to talk today about something kind of big and specific, but you know, that's why we're doing things weekly. You can come back and tune in for other things. So I'm about to read a really long title to everybody, so bear with me. But this is the title of Ruhi's manuscript that we're going to be talking a little bit about today, but focusing on one particular topic. So the title is The Role of Self-Regulation and Shift Work Schedules to Counter the Slow Violence of Shift Work, Notes from the Frontline. So what in
heavy.
A nutshell,
it's heavy.
But it's not that long of a read, but can you give us the quick 2-minute summary? What is this?
This is the title of my self-case study that I started conducting in 2011 when I was 39 years old. And it came out because after doing night shifts and over a decade and a half of doing night shifts, that I was beginning to feel the effects of shift work that was having, that negative effects that it was having on me. And this is when I actually started looking at seeing what is actually happening to me. And I started collecting data. So this summarizes the collection of 5 years of data and experiments that I conducted on myself and programs and systems that I created to counter those negative effects of shift work that I was beginning to feel. So
this is technically the third episode of our little podcast here. And in television, the third episode was always the one where you made a bit of a adjustment or swing in a direction. The first one is always the pilot, give people a sense of it. The second one's similar to the pilot. But the third one, they kind of go, okay, now we can go into the vision and we can talk about it. So I have a couple things. First, I want to talk about slow violence. That's what today we're going to talk about, is slow violence and talking a little bit about that. But before we get there, I do think it's interesting to note that you're saying you recognized changes in yourself first. Do you mind talking a little bit about what you were seeing, that how shift work started to affect you? And are these things that, I mean, don't go into it too much because we're going to get to it in future podcasts, but are these things you started to recognize were common in others as well as you started into this study?
I can't speak for other people. We can talk about scientific data.
Sure.
Based upon on that. But myself, I started to recognize a shift in my personality. There was a total swing in my personality. What I started to notice was that I was I was in a very negative state of mind. And actually, it came to a head after I was on my fourth night shift and I came home. And I found that as I was walking home, everything was very bright, like so bright that I couldn't deal with it. The noises, the cars around me, it was too loud. Everything was too loud. And I walked into my home. And I think at that point, my son was about 7 years old. And my niece was four, because my niece and my sister were staying with me. My sister was doing her MBA at Queens. So I was looking after my children, and I couldn't deal with them. Like, I actually, what ended up happening was I ended up going into my bedroom and closing the door because I couldn't. It was just too much. And I completely broke down at that point. And I remember going, there is something so wrong about me at this particular point.
And you mentioned in last week's episode about the sensory thing, about you suggesting to people when you work shift work to wear heavy sunglasses to try to like block that out. And it sounds like sensory overload is happening the minute you're leaving the shift work, which obviously is doing probably more damage than people seem to realize, which is kind of the point of us talking about this, is it's damage that people don't see is happening.
Yeah, I think it's sensory. It depends on person to person. For me, it was definitely sensory. And other things that I started noticing, once I started noticing the sensory aspect of it or the state of negativity aspect of it, was also later I started noticing my grip strength was off. Like things would just fall out of my hand. But these are things that came like later that you're not paying attention to, right? You're not, because you're kind of in it.
Right.
But the interesting thing about this is that when you recognize that, it's not like you have entire methodology in front of you.
Right.
It's not like, oh, I recognize is where I am. Oh, let's be in a, now let's get into a positive state of mind. Let's be positive. How do we, that realization was actually more devastating than anything else, because you're like, oh, what do I do? What do I do? Because it actually started creating a phenomenal sense of panic within myself, recognizing that something was askewed about my personality, that it had completely shifted from who I was, or who I thought I was, or who I recognized myself to be, that I was no longer that person, that I'm in this particular state, and it's not like you can pull yourself out of it.
Right.
And what do I do? What do you do? Do you then realize you quit your job? Like, you don't even know actually what is causing what, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you have no realization. But once I came to that sort of thing, my first, and I had my kind of moment in that bedroom that I'd closed myself off from everybody, I was like, okay, so there's one way to go is to completely ignore this and keep going as you are. Very easy. Then
which
you ignore
what
and just.
A lot of people do, unfortunately.
Yeah. Or. What is it that one thing that would make you feel better?
Right.
What is one thing that you can go back to and that has always made you feel better? And that was exercise.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, my schedule was very erratic, I have to say. There was no rhythm to my schedule. It was 4 nights, 3 nights off, then come back for a day shift, another 3 nights, 2 nights off, weekends, like all kinds of, there was no rhythm. And so once there is no rhythm, and we talked about this in our previous podcast, is how important rhythmicity is to thriving as a human being. Like, not just merely surviving, rhythmicity is the point where we thrive, that anticipation of what our needs are met ahead of time, rather than us, you know, trying to compensate and trying to make up for our needs. Anticipating and having that in place actually is a process where we thrive. And when that process is compromised, and when that rhythmicity is compromised, then all the other systems about you are going to be compromised. So I thought, oh, so one thing that makes me feel good is exercise. So that's maybe if I start. And that was a survival mode. This is the absolute truth. I wasn't thinking about a case study.
Right.
I wasn't thinking about collecting data. I wasn't thinking, oh, this is going to become something that I'm going to end up presenting to scientific communities, or perhaps write a paper about, or perhaps have this podcast where we are. This wasn't the thought process. The thought process, that very particular time, that very particular moment was survival.
Yeah.
How do I survive this? Because it's easy to say quit your job. The economics
absolutely.
Come into play.
Yeah.
What do you mean quit your job?
Yeah,
what
it's
are
not
you
an
going
option for a lot of people.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's not. And so, or the other thing is, oh, I'll ignore this. I'll just go as is, like, you know, this, like nothing happened. I've had my moment. I've had my little breakdown, and now I can just carry on. And perhaps later on, I'll have another one and we'll carry on. But
that's not the right rhythm to go by.
Well, and that's not my personality either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you recognize something. You're like, oh, this is actually a problem. This is actually a problem. And now what do I do about it?
Yeah.
An interesting thing is I'm in the field of sleep.
Yeah.
Sleep medicine.
Yeah.
I'm studying sleep disorders in other people. So it's coming at it from a very different angle because you are really aware of what is happening.
Yeah.
And so this is where it started.
Yeah.
And there was no, I was not recording. Only thing I was recording at the very beginning of this was just what I was doing in terms of my exercising. And then everything else came later. And we'll talk about it as this thing proceeds.
Well, and I think that, you know, the kind of point I want to pull out of this is looking at your title. And certainly when there's a title that is as heavy as this one, where there's so much to go through, I like to break things down to make it easier. So, you know, we're talking about what the role of self-regulation and shift schedules, so two things that we have to hopefully have somewhat control over, how they can play to counter the slow violence of shift work. So define for us, what is the slow violence of shift work?
It's a term that I have borrowed from Rob Nixon. He's a professor of English and humanities and environmental science, actually, at Princeton University. And this is a concept that was actually introduced to me by my friend, my very dear friend, Sarah Kastner, because in 2015, when I was actually submitting the abstract to one of the scientific conferences, the Canadian Sleep Society conference, and I was thinking about the topic, and I was thinking, oh, negative consequences. I said, it's like negative consequences. It's much more than just negative consequences. It's not negative. There's something more profound and something deep and something that speaks to the what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say the heaviness. Something speaks to the, I don't want to say brevity either. I don't know. So I was looking for something that speaks to how I was feeling, how it was impacting my humanity.
Right.
And I think that was a key component in all of this, is like how it had impacted my humanity.
That's a very interesting way to look at it.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, negative consequences, like cigarette smoking has negative consequences.
Right.
This is much more deeper.
Right.
What is it doing? Like
it's
shifting everything within myself, my biology. It's in my biology, my psychology, everything is actually being shifted.
But you're saying this is a slow thing, right? Because you're saying
slow violence. So as my friend Sarah Kastner, as I was thinking, was like, I want to figure out how to say. She goes, it's an act of slow violence.
Mm.
And I was like, slow violence? She goes, yeah. She introduced me to works of Rob Nixon, which was, and his book is titled Slow Violence and the Environmentalism of the Poor.
Mm.
And once I got into the book, I started looking at it and I said, oh, this makes complete sense. Because what is violence?
Mm.
If we were to look at the Oxford English Dictionary title of it, slow violence is behavior involving physical force intended to hurt, damage, or kill someone or something.
Yeah.
Right? Violence is impactful. It's sudden. It's spectacular. It's a spectacle. That's how we perceive violence, as our movies, when we see, you know, something blown up, something being shot. That's an act of violence.
Yeah. Which it's not the, you know, you're not seeing
it's not
a
sudden.
Lot. You're seeing the build up with this as opposed to the sudden, which might be more cinematic. But I think more common in our society is the slow build that things have on you, affecting you emotionally or physically.
Yeah, so with slow violence is something that takes... that's actually, you can't see it happening.
Mm.
It's unseen. It's invisible. These are invisible traumas that are happening within that takes a longer time to build up, longer time for their consequences to reveal themselves. And it made complete sense to me that in terms of shift work, that's exactly what's happening. What's happening is that those traumas, those going against your... biology, And those going against the rhythms of your biology, that's exactly what was happening, was that there is an accretion of these negative consequences that build up over time, and their impact is felt later, way later on. And sometimes you're not even realizing that they are causing an impact, because if there's a personality change, you actually sometimes are not even aware that there's a personality change, because this is what becomes this, because a personality change becomes you. Yeah. That is who you become. And once that is who you become, then that's who you are. Like, how would you differentiate it from, how can you say, wait a minute, 10 years ago, there was something so positive about my outlook on life and well-being, and suddenly you're going, wait, there is something that's completely altered within, have to be, and you have to be able to give yourself that space, and you have to have that sense of awareness, right, that there is something that's building up. Because if things are building up slowly over time, toxins are building up slowly over time, then how do you recognize where the start is and how it started and how it started to happen?
And I think you bring up a really interesting point there, because you don't always notice changes within yourself until something usually happens and you go, oh, wait a minute, I'm reacting or thinking differently than I did 10 years ago. But we don't look at ourselves 10 years ago and say, that's who we are. People grow and change. So it makes sense, everything that you're saying. But it's very interesting to me that we're working with something that has such a slow effect that you don't know where it started, you don't always see it, and then suddenly, like your experience, suddenly you can hit a wall and feel like, okay, some of these things are now starting to come out. And it's interesting that the thing of slow violence to me is almost scarier in a way, because over time, I feel like a lot of damage can be done.
A lot of damage is being done.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if we start looking at the literature on slow violence and you start looking at it, the climate change, all of these are acts of slow violence. And I liked how he approached it, how I liked that he called it that it's invisible traumas, the catastrophic effects of environmental deterioration and its invisible trauma on the poor, those things that we don't see. And also, it introduced me to a whole set of language.
Yeah.
That book introduced me to the language of disposable people, that we are, that, and it's, and then you start looking at it, just start looking at it in terms of our society, that idea of disposability, that you can use people and use them, and then that's it. Off you go and bring another set of people, and then on to the next set, and then on to the next set.
And I will say that's something that is, I think, very prevalent, especially where we are in North America, where even the way we structure work is you essentially work yourself to the grave, is basically the idea. You just burn out and you work yourself down, where there's so many other countries that even their work hours are less. They've suggested things. Like, I can't remember what documentary it was, but it was talking about the best places to live in the world and how Finland's work day is 10 to 3 and shops and stuff.
Denmark and Sweden and Norway, and because they look at humanity in a different way.
Yeah.
Like, human beings are not these, machines of that are there to just produce and productivity, because that's how we see, right?
Yeah.
What you want to see in the end is how productive you are. How is it affecting your productivity? And how we dismiss the humanity of it.
You know what I like about this manuscript, especially the title, but everything about it, is the approach that you're taking with this seems so different than the approach that I've seen people take when there's an issue. So I like titles, and I think we need to really dive into the fact that what you're saying is the role of self-regulation and shift schedules to counter the slow violence of shift work. The title isn't "Shift Work is Bad for Society and Needs to Be Eliminated," which is unfortunately the way a lot of people take things. When there's an issue, the best way to solve the problem is to destroy it. You're saying it's a fact of life, and it'd be better if it isn't here, but it is here. So this is how you can use certain tools to regulate it, to counter it.
Yeah, so it is in the end. And at the beginning of this, I did not realize it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But now, looking at it retrospectively, 8 years ago, like 8 years in making, is it's a set of tools.
Yeah.
You collect your set of tools, and there is no set model. There's no set model for shift work because each human being is going to be different. The type of tools we're going to use is going to be different. How we deal with things is going to be different. My motivation is very different from your motivation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what motivates me would be completely different. What carries me forth is going to be completely different. How I see the world is going to be completely different because we have different experiences.
Yeah.
But the point is to come to that kind of awareness. The point of this is all actually in the end is awareness.
I think you're right, because I think it's up to the person themselves to have those sort of motivations and tools, because the employers themselves aren't going to provide those. Their number one thing is money. They just want to make money. But having that toolbox, so to speak, at your disposal is definitely going to be helpful, because like you're right, it's not going to go away.
No, it's not going away. And I don't think productivity is also the key. But I think also that idea of self-awareness also ends up giving you a voice. Mm-hmm. You know, the deeper we're going to go into manuscript, we're going to see how that voice helps to be able to advocate for yourself and to be able to say, wait, certain things are not right. How can I tweak a certain system? How can I work? Because I am deeply fond of my job. Mm-hmm. Really, really like it. I love the clinical work. I like people. I like having them coming, figuring out what their problems are and being able to help them in any which way. I like to be in service of people. It's a wonderful job. And then how do we mitigate all those other things? Like, how do I mitigate being in that job and being engaged? Because I like that. I like to be engaged, because if I'm not, then I don't want to be there. And how do I keep myself engaged? And so I think that was something that formulated over time. That didn't come overnight. It's not an overnight thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't some things worked, some things didn't work. And we'll know, like, there are things that worked and there are things that I had to reassess that were, you know, I thought they were working really, really well until they weren't working really, really well, which also gives you an insight that we are dynamic human beings. We are constantly shifting. Our variables are constantly shifting.
Something that you have in here talks about seeing if exercise and nutrition or things that we already know are good for our well-being can still be effective to make us as flexible as possible for what is an inflexible shift work system, even though shifts are always different all over the place. It's like, it kind of, you know, it's a pull and it's a drag because it's different. Shifts are changing all the time. So in a, you know, briefly, obviously, because we're going to dive into this in more podcasts, but are you looking at those are part of the tools that you can try to begin with? Because you're saying that everyone's different, which is great. Where are the starting points for people? Is it exercise and nutrition? Are those two of the key points? Or were there other things that you thought this is good starting points to combat?
Well, for me, like, we'll talk about me, because I cannot speak again for other people, mm-hmm. right? It's not. For me, my go-to was exercise.
Right.
Because exercise always made me feel good. It's never.
Is that why you chose it? I mean, just to talk about, you know.
Oh,
why
from
you
the very
there?
Beginning, like as I was sitting in the bedroom, mm-hmm. in the closed door behind the door,
mm-hmm.
That was actually after, you know, I came to some form of clarity about my the situation that I was in.
Yeah.
I was thinking, oh, it's what is one thing that makes me feel good? Exercise.
Yeah.
Exercise makes me feel good. So I thought, okay, I'll start. We'll start with that, just period. Let's not see what happens. And I wasn't even like, see what happens. I was like, I got to figure it out. So how do I figure it out? Let's start with one thing that I know that makes me feel good. Because up until then, I've been a very active person for most of my life.
Right.
But having children, doing shift work, which was arrhythmic, four nights, like that kind of schedule, which had no rhythmicity to it, you could not actually create a rhythm. And you are in a perpetual state of tiredness because you have children, you are taking them to school, and you are waking up mm-hmm. just before they come. You're waking up so you can pick them up. So it's not like, you know, you're getting adequate amount of sleep
right.
either.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of those factors actually compound. And you're feeling, how do you exercise when you're feeling overwhelmed and tired and you're constantly having to do things, especially when your children are little. And so my first thing was, my first thought was the breaks that I would have at work is what I would utilize in terms of exercising. And I hadn't been in actual physical training for a while. Like, I was moving with my kids, for sure. I was running with them, doing that sort of stuff, but not like intentional movements for myself. So I had to come back to that. And that's a hard part, because if exercise was easy, we would all be doing it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, we would all be very, very fit and everything would be great. But that was actually an interesting thing to the starting point was interesting. And I had my colleague and friend who we started together. We'd be like, okay, I'll do 100 stairs and then you go do 100 stairs and then I'll do 10 push-ups and then you go do 10 push-ups. Like, so we were having that. And then I kind of continued to move on from there. And what ended up happening was that there was a, we had a speaker at one point who was supposed to be an expert in shift work. And after listening to the talk and after listening to the answers, realized that actually there wasn't much that was being offered at all in terms of real life interventions. There wasn't something concrete that was coming out of that conversation. And at that point, I was already training. I'd already started exercising. And what ended up happening was that after that talk and after my conversation with the speaker, I realized that I needed to be my case study. I needed to be my own case study, and I needed to start recording everything, and I needed to actually start delve deep into the scientific literature that was published on shift work, that was being published on sleep, and then start figuring out a system.
Very good. I mean, I feel like this is a topic we're going to continuously go back to over the next little while. We are pretty much out of time for this episode, but I think it's a really good introduction to slow violence that's going to keep coming back into it. So thank you again, Ruhi, for doing this. I think this is a really good starting point for what will be something we come back to quite a bit. But it's good that we took the moment to define this term, because it's going to come up so often.
Absolutely. And I think we need to also shift language. If we're going to define things, then we should speak our truth. It's very important to me. And I think we need to use that. We need to change the language around things, for sure.
And this has been another episode of the, we'll call it this week, the Ruhi Sleep Podcast. That's your name. Stay tuned at the end of every episode for the new name each week. This is Mike.
This is Andrew.
And Ruhi.
Thank you so much for listening.